This is Nancy Casey with an update about the situation in Haiti, where grassroots activists in the country have been responding to the disaster there since the moment it began. In happier, easier times on the mountainous island of Lagunav, I accompanied a women's rights activist, Afilene Rosemont, from her home in the town of Matenois to a meeting in Mont-Ramier, a two-hour or so walk that includes a precipitous descent into a ravine where, at the very bottom, patient groups of women and children wait their turn to fill basins and buckets from the pencil-thin stream of a spring. As I steadied myself with both hands to scramble up the other side, women and young girls heaved themselves from foothold to foothold with 5-gallon buckets of water on their heads. Afilene challenged me, "I bet you don't know the real history of Lagunav," and she launched into an explanation. "Lagunav has always been a part of Haiti that nobody thinks about," she said, "the hinterland. You could earn a living. It wasn't easy, and there were certainly many problems. Because I was an orphan, being passed from household to household among my relatives, I can tell you there wasn't anything to spare. Still, with a little ambition, anyone could make a living. People planted beans, corn, and millet. Every house had those things stored in the rafters, and even someone who didn't like to work hard or who had bad luck could always find something to eat, even if it was just beans and millet. Sweet potatoes, yams, all the different wild greens, people just harvested them. Plus fruits and vegetables, so many fruit trees, all the ones you know, mangoes, limes, coconut, breadfruit, all that. Everybody made a little charcoal. There weren't any vehicles, only donkeys. You spent a day going down the mountain with a load of donkeys and then got onto a boat. There was no dock. Porters carried you and all your provisions onto the boat. The place where you dock now, at Carrières on the mainland, all that belonged to the Duvalier family and was not for people to use. So porters there would walk out into the waist-deep water and carry people and their things from the boat to the shore. They were different boats then, too. Sailboats didn't have motors to push them faster like they do now, so the crossing took a couple of days. That's how it happened that I was born on a boat. My mother didn't realize I was coming. I was born in the morning, just as the boat was arriving. People were very kind to her, brought her some clean clothes and food, and took her things into Port-au-Prince and sold them for her, and when they came back 3 days later, she went home with them, and me too, to Lagunav. Haitian people have always climbed on boats to try and find better lives elsewhere. It was something people just did, one of the ways that you could make a living. Not just going to the U.S., but to Venezuela, Martinique, French Guiana, and the other islands too. You took a boat, and it could be really hard, but usually after a while you found some kind of work and you could send money back to your family. In the 1970s and 80s, it was easy to go to Miami. You just took a boat and went. You could find other Haitians and they helped you. It wasn't hard to find work there. It got so that just about every family had someone in Miami working and sending them money. Those people learned a different lifestyle and came to see us as really backward, working so hard to raise food instead of buying it from stores with money. Most families came to rely on having someone working in the U.S. and sending cash back. Instead of working so hard to grow millet and going to Port-au-Prince to sell it, people went to Port-au-Prince, bought Miami rice, and brought it back to Lagunav to sell and eat. We never ate rice on Lagunav before that. Rice isn't a traditional food for us. Millet is our food, and corn. But why grow food when your relatives in Miami are sending you money to buy it? Then, in 1990, it all changed. We had political troubles. Life got hard, and people did what they always did when that happened, got on boats to help their families by finding work in Miami. But the boats didn't get through anymore. They stopped you, loaded everyone onto their big boats, and then burned the Haitian boat with all your belongings and papers and everything on it. They took people to Guantanamo. They stayed in camps and waited there to have interviews, but just about everyone always ended up getting sent back to Haiti. Now, when someone went to Miami, they started a new life. Some people would try really hard to get their families over, but many men just married and had another family. They might have bills and problems. And when the younger people in the family couldn't keep going to Miami and finding work to keep the money coming in, life got really hard. But people thought it was temporary. We never had this thing of it being impossible to get to the U.S. to find work and money. Everyone thought it would go back to the way it was. Many had quit planting crops at all, and people who started to do that again found that they couldn't make much money off of them because people would rather buy Miami rice. It was cheaper. People in Port-au-Prince still needed charcoal to cook with, So making charcoal was the way to make up for the missing cash. People thought it was temporary. It's been 20 years. Selling charcoal is the way to get money. Now let me tell you the really bad thing about charcoal. You can make decent charcoal with branches as thin as your forearm, so no trees at all were being left behind. And that's the story of how Lagunov went from being self-sufficient and an exporter of food to being deforested and destitute, all in one generation. Going to Miami. That's turned out to be the end of us. That was a history lesson in the words of Afelin Rosemont, a teacher and leader in the movement to safeguard the rights of women and children on the island of Lagunov. Afelin was born on a sailboat plying the waters between Lagunov and Haiti's mainland in 1975 or 76, she's not quite sure. Her mother died not long after that. Wooden sailboats with outboard motors remain the lifeline between Lagunov and the Haitian mainland. The market trade is the province of women. They leave their houses in the middle of the night and walk several hours down to the dock to take a boat at dawn. They might go north to the market city of Saint-Marc, where food grown in the Artibonite Valley is sold, or they might go to Port-au-Prince to buy food and other goods coming into the port. Either way, they acquire as many provisions as they can afford and can manage to bring back across the water. They get them up the mountain either by donkey or in battered, jam-packed pickup trucks that are the island's public transportation system. In political troubles and after hurricanes, Lagunov is always threatened with food shortages as that fragile transportation system is disrupted. Haitian activists and leaders on the island have worked together in these crises, keeping abreast of local food supplies, sometimes sending expeditions to the mainland on chartered boats, and always trying to reassure the populace that if they work together and take everyone's needs and resources into consideration, it will still be hard, but everyone will get taken care of. In the aftermath of the earthquake, the boats quickly began running to Lagunov, laden only with traumatized survivors. What money people had was in the rubble of their crushed homes, so even the able-bodied couldn't buy food. Anyone with cash rushed to the open markets on the mainland to buy up the dwindling supplies. Within a week after the hurricane, Haitian leaders from a dozen or more communities and organizations on the island had a strategy for receiving food aid in a way that would be orderly and not upend the local economic system. A persistent woman from Michigan made contact with someone on a ship who, quoting from a declassified briefing, assured her that commanders on the USS Bunker Hill and the USS Carl Vinson were aware of the situation and not going to abandon Lagunov. The Bunker Hill docked several times, and military officials met with mayors and other leaders to coordinate their plans. As Haiti entered its third week as an unprecedented disaster zone, Chris Lowe received a message from a Haitian contact in Ansagale, the port town where tens of thousands of people had landed and were either moving inland or camped out. The message read, "Hi, Chris. I wanted to let you know the Marines went to Ansagale yesterday, started distributing food by themselves, and created a lot of chaos. That's after we spent hours upon hours with them planning a process to channel the aid. I think next they will start doing flyovers to drop off food stuff, because they ruined the best system put in place and now they're afraid. This is to warn you, to let your folk on the ground know." Chris wrote to me, "I just bought 10 tons of food for the school to distribute. It'll come from the U.S. Never say never. One day you promote self-sufficiency and homegrown, the next minute you're buying U.S. rice because people are flooding onto Lagunov and you hear there's not enough food in the open markets for the number of people that are now there." This has been an update on the situation in Haiti. You can learn more about the work of groups and individuals mentioned in this update and how to support them by going to www.couragewoman.org. This report was produced by KRFP, Radio Free Moscow in Moscow, Idaho, and Yin Radio at yinradio.org. I'm Nancy Casey.